Blog Talk Radio.
Good morning, everybody. This is Renee. Welcome to Renee's Heart to Heart. Happy Friday. Today, we are going to do a recap of all week, like we usually do on Friday. And I was looking over my notes. And, of course, today when I opened up my computer, I realized that there's still more about poor Miley Cyrus. And we talked about her on Monday at length. And I was surprised but still pleased to see how many people hold responsible her agents, the people that direct her behavior and things like that. So I think most of us adults get that she's gone a little bit off the deep end. We also, Shelley compared her to Britney Spears, and we talked about back in the day with Bette Midler and a few other kind of raucous singers. It is the world of entertainment, and it is always beneficial to be shocking for whatever reasons. We didn't talk about it the other day, but after I got thinking about it, I was reminded of, for those of us that are old enough to remember this, the first time Elvis Presley was on the Ed Sullivan Show, they would only show him from the waist up because of all of his gyrations. How funny is that? Now, when kids dance, you don't even need much of an imagination. So times have certainly changed in more ways than one. I'm going to bring in Shelley so we can do our recap. Good morning, Shelley.
Good morning, Rainey.
How are you?
I'm doing really good this morning, and you?
Good. I was just telling everybody we're going to do our recap, and this morning when I opened up the computer, of course, it was more about Miley Cyrus. Apparently, she made a comment. I didn't read it because I was checking for other things, but it's still in the news, so regardless of whether it was negative or positive, it's kept her on the front page again for, 2 weeks? So I'm sure that's a big part of it, and it doesn't seem to matter for the powers that be, and the ones that get their 3% and 5% and 10% really don't care what people think of her, which makes me feel bad and makes me realize that, yet again, that the leaders or the people that are in charge are the ones that should be held responsible for everybody's behavior. And then, of course, on Monday we talked about the teacher that raped the 14-year-old, and then she eventually took her own life, and the fact that we discussed the judge that I watched the video of, and I actually judged the judge's looks and behavior on the video, and like he did the 14-year-old, and we kind of showed the correlation between making a judgment call. I mean, he doesn't look like he's any more in charge of anything than Chewbacca here. But he is, and probably he most of the time makes good decisions. But because I just went with the unkempt look and the kind of I just rolled out of bed kind of appearance, I could have made many negative judgments about him, and most of them probably would have been unfair. And that's, of course, the point we were trying to make. We also discussed sextortion, which is extortion for sex, and how much of that is going on out there with teens and young people. We didn't get into that a whole lot, but it is something that is talked about all the time. And on many of the shows you and I like to watch, because they take real life things and have shows about them, the Law and Orders and some of the shows like that, they always touch on some of the current affairs. And then we did, I talked on Monday about the cousins that were going to prank their other cousin before they all went to a party and hid in the closet. And he thought somebody had snuck into his house and shot one of them and killed them. And after we had that show, I got a really long email from one of my followers, one of my listeners, and she told me a story about doing that to her cousin when she was very young. And he almost shot her. And she said, you know, they thought it was very funny when they were kids because, you know, he missed. And I said, well, yeah, I guess then it would be funny, you know. And, of course, the nervous energy that happens to you after something like that that could have ended your life or at the very least changed your life forever does seem funny. We all laugh about things like that. But her story was very funny, and I actually thought about reading it to everyone because it was very funny. And then I thought, no, I shouldn't do that unless I'm sure she's okay with it. And then, of course, we talked about after Miley did the near naked thing. She was at the airport waiting to get on an airplane in bunny jammies and bunny slippers. So. I think it's a cry for help. I think we discussed that at length. Do you have anything to add to any of those things, Shel, that we talked about on Monday?
Well, you know, the thing is, I would be curious only because I'm trying to see either where Miley's head is at or where her publicity team is. I'm curious as to how she's responding to all the reaction. So I kind of would like to know what that is. Just to see where they're taking her, whether or not her career is going to continue in this direction, or if they're responding in more of let's take a hold of this situation and get Miley back to being Miley a little bit. So mm-hmm. because that's a reflection mm-hmm. on where her team is, her response is going to be a reflection on where the direction of her team is. I don't know that she would come up with a statement all on her own. And I guess you would be able to tell by the tone of her words whether or not she was just speaking from her heart or being given a press release. So that would I'd be a little curious about that, you know, just out of concern for her. It bothers me when I see young stars kind of going awry and none of the adults and none of the professionals in their life giving them the proper assistance. So I would like to see this kind of turn out a little bit better because she was sort of, I mean, she was a good role model for a long time there. And, you know, they don't always have to go from being this squeaky clean image to something raunchy just to let people know that they're a real performer and that they have a range of abilities. You know, they don't have to go from one extreme to the other. They can stay in that nice persona and have a very successful career. You know, acting takes a lot more than sex. There's all types of mm-hmm. drama, and if that's what she wants to break out into, she can break out into it in other ways that show more of an artistic ability.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Well, and I think that's true. You know, there is a, there's kind of a little, I don't know, like a bio about her on her wall. It says, Miley Cyrus is another Disney teen queen turned titillating 20-something. When her dad, achy breaky heart singer Billy Ray Cyrus, returned to showbiz as an actor after years as a recluse in 2003, Cyrus, whose stage name is derived from her nickname Smiley, decided it was the career path for her as well. She guested on Dad's show, Doc, and had been a part of Tim Burton's Big Fish before landing the lead role in a Disney Channel split personality smash, Hannah Montana, in 2005. Billy Ray was cast as her dad, big surprise, of her average teen day-by-day famous pop star by night character. By 2006, the musical series is cable's most watched show for kids 6 to 14. It spawned two chart topping albums, a big screen blockbuster, a sold out 54-date concert tour on which her boyfriend Nick Jonas, Brotherly Band, is the opening act. $1 billion merchant line and 7-figure book deal. People's Richest Kid in 2008 still had to do chores, attend church, and live on an allowance. The show's success helped Cyrus transition into making non-Montana music in 2008's Breakout. And films like Bolt and 2010's The Last Song. On that tearjerker set, she met current fiancé, Liam Hemsworth, I don't even know who that is, who proposed in 2012. Since Hannah finished in 2011, the current Two and a Half Men guest star has been stirring up controversy of the adult variety on the regular. Between dramatic dye jobs and haircuts, a leaked video of her birthday bong hit, which she claimed was filled with legal herb saliva. Oof. Salvia? Legal herb salvia? I don't even know what that is. Do you, Shelley?
No. I mean, I don't know. Maybe it's a type of, when they're saying herb, I don't know. No, I don't know what they're talking about.
Yeah. Pregnancy and eating disorder rumors, side and under boob photos, her tattoo addiction and her scandalous tweets, it seems boring days are few and far between in her world. Now, I clicked on this site because it said that, that she talked about the video, but it doesn't appear to be that to me. It just appears as a kind of a site about everything that's going on in her world. So, at any rate, I think that she... You know, part of it was contrived by her agents to get her more notoriety. I'm sure that that's true. And part of it is because she's letting the world know that she's not Hannah Montana anymore. And I don't know. I would guess the rest of it just has to do with, almost like a coming of age thing. And it makes me feel bad because, I don't think coming of age should mean you turn into an exhibitionist, even if you are an entertainer. You still should be able to maintain some dignity and just do what you do well. She's a great singer. She knows how to dance. She's a very, very talented little girl, and also has done very well for herself with the comedy and the young people's show. I understand why she doesn't want to be Hannah Montana anymore, but I don't think that means she should turn into, I don't know. I can't even think of any notoriety hookers right now, but, I just think it's from one extreme to the other. Goody two shoes to, whatever she thought she was trying to be. So we'll keep an eye on that because I think that that's going to keep spiraling out of control. And then the kids that hurt themselves, we just talked about them. And the story, I think I told you the next day on the phone about the email that I'd gotten from one of our listeners telling me the whole story about her cousin. She calls him her gun-toting cousin. But it was a very funny email, And, and then, of course, Tuesday, we talked about the things that we thought about because of what Miley did, and that had to do with beauty pageants and promiscuity at a very, very, very early age. And there's a lot to be said about that, and, of course, every day we read more and more. And one of the things I didn't touch on that I thought about later when I was looking at my notes, you and I both have dealt with this on a couple different levels during our almost 13-year friendship, and that is the fact that we knew a lot of young girls who were experimenting with lesbianism and didn't want to listen to any older input about their feelings and what they were experiencing. And you and I dealt with that a couple different times, didn't we?
Yes, yeah, and me within my own family at one time.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Well, and actually, one of the young girls that I was kind of mentoring is a part of my family now because she went from believing that's who she was to being my oldest grandson's fiance. So I think it was, is still very confusing because now there's so much conversation about it. Did you ever know anybody when you were a teenager, which was a shorter time ago than mine, that felt that they were homosexual and were trying to deal with it, maybe confided in you?
No, actually, I didn't know anybody would.
Well, I just lost Shelley. I did. I had a girlfriend who said to me one day, out of the blue, and I reflect on it now and think to myself, did that make me nervous? I really don't think it did. I don't think either one of us were old enough to put any kind of slant on it. It just was what it was. And she said to me, she said, how do you ever think that you like girls better than boys? And I said, you mean for friends? And I think I want to say that we were like 12 and 13. And I said, no. I said, if you're talking about romantically, no. And she said, well, I do. And I said, you do? And she said, yeah. And I said, what does that mean? I said, do you mean you feel like, you know, like having like some kind of a relationship with a girl that's other than like you and I are, like friends? And she goes, yeah. And I said, no, I never felt that way. And nothing ever happened with that. But she did say that to me, and she did ask me that question. So you cut off right when you were talking, so I filled in with a story of my own. You're back,
okay.
Right?
Yeah, the only thing that happened to me the first time I really, I mean, I knew that there were homosexuals in the world, you know, growing up, but I had never met any.
Right.
And then I had gone out, I was 16, I think, and I'd gone out on to a biker club with my dad. He was... He used to go on these things called poker runs, which were great fun. It was an all-day event, and you would start out at a meeting place, and then you would have to have this map. You'd have to have a passenger on the back of the bike, and you'd look for clues on the road to get to the next post, and you'd get a poker card. And there were five stops before you got back to the party, and you'd have to get a poker card in each one of these stops. It was fun. It was called a poker run.
Yeah, we used to do that with snowmobiles. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it was great. It was great. And it was like an all-day event, you know? So when we ended up at the bar at the end of the evening, these two girls approached me, very attractive, and we were dancing and all that. We came back to the bar, and they kept asking me to dance all night. And then one of the guys came up to me, and he said, do you know what they're doing? And I said, what are you talking about? He said, the older one's hitting on you. He said, she's gay. And I had that, like, I was completely clueless. I was very demonstrative. It didn't bother me that somebody was putting their hand on my shoulder. I mean, I didn't take it sexual because it was a girl. You know, I wasn't going there at all, you know. And because I'm a very affectionate person and I'm very demonstrative of my own, it didn't offend me. I didn't feel like she was encroaching on my space or anything. And I have to admit, it's going to sound stupid, I actually felt kind of flattered. You know,
mm-hmm.
But it was but I was like completely did not the vibes or anything, and
yeah. So are you there? That, yeah, you keep cutting out, Shel.
And then one of my friends, when I saw her, I suspected that she was. Told me and
Shelley. Shell. Shell. Shelly.
Yeah, I'm still here. Can you hear me?
Yeah, no, yeah, but only every like fourth word we're hearing. Other than that, we're not hearing anything.
Yeah, I'm not getting such a hot reception again.
Well, and I think I can recount some stories like that as I grew older. But my first encounter was the girlfriend who asked me if I ever thought about whether or not I liked girls, and we were very young men. And I remember thinking about her later and thinking to myself, you know, that must be kind of confusing, and realizing that I had never given that any thought before. And of course, as I got older, that happened to me a couple times. Matter of fact, very funny story. I was out playing pool with all my adult kids and my husband and all of us. There was probably 15 of us, and we were having a great time in this really pretty, kind of a beachy-looking young woman. My youngest son said to me, "Mom, check it out. She's checking me out." And I said, "Oh, good for you." And she comes over and asks David who I am, and he was mortified. He was like, "Here I am thinking she's going to hit on me, and she hits on my mother." So it is a part of life today, you know. It is a part of life today, and I find it to be, you know, one of those kind of things that is fine with me. I think everybody should be able to make their own choices. I realize the rest of the world doesn't always feel that way, but that's the way I feel about it. But that being in search of your own sexuality has a lot to do with trying to make you more grown up when you're 6 and 7, sometimes even 4 and 5 years old, like in some of these beauty pageants. That's how we got on this conversation, was because we see some of these shows on TV, some of the ads in the papers, all these little girls loaded down with hair pieces and false eyelashes and all these slinky dresses and everything. And part of it is cute, you know, oh, how sweet, they have her all grown up. But part of it is kind of scary. And I do believe it can tend to confuse a very, very young mind as to what's important and what isn't important. And that's how we got on that particular conversation. And we also talked about the fact that it being in search of who you are is one of the things that lends itself to promiscuity, because you're confused and you want to find out, you know, what the big deal is. I remember having girlfriends tell me that they had had sex, and I was like, "Really?" I was like 15, and I said, "You have?" And they were like, "Yeah." And I said, "Why?" "Well, just so I could see what it was like." And I thought, "Oh, okay." So everybody has different things that you know, that are important to them. It didn't really seem all that important to me when I was 15. But, you know, that was just me. So, but I do think when you put a child and make everything about what they look like and how beautiful they look and how old they look, it tends to confuse them. And I do worry about all these beauty pageants. I mentioned years ago that my daughter was in a beauty pageant when she was a little girl. She did a bathing suit, but it wasn't, you know, like a skimpy bikini or anything. It was a pretty little bathing suit. And all the girls wore bathing suits, just like in, you know, Miss America or any of those kind of beauty pageants. And then they wore pretty little dresses. And they talked. They didn't have to do anything for talent, but they talked and let people ask them questions and stuff like that. And she won that beauty contest. And but I didn't, you know, she wasn't loaded down with all kinds of makeup or anything like that. It was just in good. It was at a you know, a small town. Actually, we used to call them old home days. And there'd be a carnival, and it would last Friday, Saturday, and Sunday. And it was fun, and we had a lot of fun doing it. But I didn't make her look like she was, I think, 7 or 8 years old, and I didn't make her look like she was 21 by any stretch of the imagination, and neither did any of the other moms. So I do think that makes a difference, and I do think it's something that the powers that be should keep an eye on, because I don't necessarily think it's the best thing you can do for a child. What do you think about that, Shell? Are you back now so that you can talk? Nope, I lost her completely that time. The minute I said that, she went right off my dashboard. She must be going through a part. She's on her way to work, and she works quite a ways from here. Wednesday, we had a bit of a memorial for 911, and I read the statistics about everything that happened that day, the time elements, how many minutes apart everything was, and it's a very, very, very heavy day. No matter who you are, no matter whether it touched your family or friends or didn't touch them, it was a day of great sadness, and still is when we think about it today. And of course, it was, other than what happened in Pearl Harbor, which I think a lot of people today don't think about too much because that was really a very, very long time ago. But that was brought here, too, and was on our soil and was tough for us to watch and be a part of. I remember my grandparents talking about Pearl Harbor and my parents. But 911 was even worse because it took the lives of children and, you know, just everyday people, not people that were in a place to fight or to fight back, people that were taken by surprise and their lives ended that day, thousands of people, and thousands of injuries and thousands of firemen who are not, firemen are not like policemen in my mind's eye. I don't know if everybody feels this way about them, but firemen for me are to put out fires, and it's dangerous, and they're trained really well to make sure that they're always protected. They have everything they need to keep themselves in a safe place, but that day it didn't help because that day was horrific. So we talked about that at length. As a matter of fact, that day for me stayed that way pretty much all day long because my 6-year-old grandson, AJ, that I talk about all the time, came home from school that day and said to me, "Graham, you're not going to believe this. A long, long time ago, these airplanes just came from other countries and flew into the side of big, tall buildings in New York City." I said, "Really?" And he said, "Yeah." He says, "And after the teacher told us this story, we had to write our own story with a picture. So you were in it." I said, "I was." And he goes, "Yeah." He says, "I drew a picture of you when you were just a little girl, because it was a really long time ago. So you were probably a little girl, and you were pointing at the airplane flying into the side of the building, and you were crying and pointing at it." And I smiled, and I said, "I was a little girl." And he says, "Yeah, weren't you a little girl all those years ago when that happened?" I said, "No, I wasn't." And I said, "Honey, it just shows you more how a 6-year-old can't define time at all, you know."
That's
so
great.
He says, "Yeah," he says to me, he says, "You weren't a little girl then?" And I said, "No, sweetie. 13 years ago, your brother was 3. Grandma, 13 years ago, was still an old woman." He goes, "Really?" He said, "The teacher said it was a long time ago." And I said, "Well, 13 years ago, or 12 years ago it was, but it, you know, it's, that's really not a really long time. It is to somebody who's only lived not quite 7 years, but not to somebody who's lived 65. And he goes, he was totally bewildered about all of that time. So then he looks at me and says to me, and of course, you know, I've talked about him before, worrying about death and age and how long people are going to live and things like that. And he says to me, "You know, Grandpa's 70 years old now." And I said, "Yes, he is. He just had a birthday." And he goes, "You know, I don't want you to worry about that because he's going to live to be way over 100. I said, "He is." He says, "Yeah, and you too, Graham." He says, "So don't be worried about any of that, okay?" I said, "Okay, I won't worry about it." So it tickled me. But I loved he's in first grade, and the teacher told the whole story. But isn't it funny how that's what he got out of it? I mean, he was very upset that an airplane, he kept saying, can you believe an airplane just flew in? Then he looked at me with this funny look on his face and he said, what happened to the people in the airplane? I said, what do you think happened to them? He says, I don't know. He said, after they hit the building, did they land someplace else? And I said, no. After they hit the building, they crashed and they died too. He said, you mean they died on purpose? I said, kind of. And I thought to myself, God, this conversation could get into a whole place that's way, way too much for him. And even though I was happy the teacher talked about it, it really gave him a lot of things to be confused about.
Yeah.
But he's, you know, he deals with things like that pretty good, actually, for somebody so young. He seems to, you can see the look on his little face like he's working it out in his own head so it makes some sense, which I can relate to because I still do that every day with a lot of things. Now, on Thursday, we got into domestic violence. And as my day went on Thursday, I discussed this subject with a lot of other people and got quite a bit of input in regard to domestic violence. And, of course, everybody brought up drugs. Everybody brought up alcohol. Everybody that I talked to said a lot of times, you know, the couple in question, you know, we all know people who like to push other people's buttons. And I said to one person who's a young person, I said, so you're telling me that a woman who behaves like this deserves to get punched or beat up or a black eye or maybe break her arm or something? Those are the kind of injuries that usually happen from something like this. No, but you know, it's not right either that, you know, just because she's a woman, she gets to say whatever she wants to say. And I said, oh, I see. Of course, this came from a young man. And I said, so words hurt more than a punch in the eye. And he said, sometimes. And I said, I see. I said, well, here's the way I feel about this forever, whatever it's worth to you. Words certainly can cause long-term damage. I get that, and I understand that totally, and I'm very careful about how I speak to people. But on the same token, you need to understand that it's nobody's right in any way, shape, or form to lay their hands on somebody else, whatever the reason. If you can't take what somebody's saying to you, you got to be grown up enough to turn around and walk away. Did I lose you again, Shelley? Strange noises are coming from your phone.
Can you hear me?
I can hear you now, but I couldn't. If you were talking, I couldn't hear anything. Very strange connection this morning.
I'm hearing some distortion and stuff on the phone, too, so I must be picky. I'm actually going to be on the road in a few minutes, so maybe it'll clear up.
Okay. Some distortion on the phone. That would be me, honey.
Very funny.
So we're back on the subject of domestic violence, and I do want to make sure that everybody understands that there are lots of numbers to call now. If you don't have a computer, if you don't have access, everybody needs to remember the numbers that I've talked about before, the 211 number. If you're in trouble like that, 211 is the organization that can help with many, many, many things. Abuse is one of them, and they can put you in line to the right numbers. They can help you get the kind of help that you need. And we also talked about the lady in New York City who is trying her very best to organize places that are affordable and supportive houses for domestic abuse survivors. And it's called New Destiny Housing. And she's trying to get her mayor in New York City to really support it and help find safe places, not just for them. It's not supposed to be temporary. That's the whole deal. I mean, like here in Florida, I don't remember what I said. I think 46 different places that are temporary housing. Temporary housing to get you out of danger and give you a safe place to stay for a few days. What she's trying to achieve is housing that you can work your job, pay a babysitter if that's what you need to do, and still afford to pay your bills. So we talked about that at length, and at the end of that day, like I said, because I've been looking at properties and looking at different places, because we, Shelley and another friend and I, are looking for a place to have a detox center. And I, of course, look at rents and the cost of homes, and things are on the rise because we're being bombarded with the fact that it's a buyer's and a seller's market again, according to all the realtors, who would very much like for us to believe all that because that's how they make their living. Keep that in the back of your head. And it is what it is. I would say to you that prices have gone up, but within the next few days they're talking about interest rates going up. So if you are a single woman who's living on, like, say, $10 or $12 an hour, which is way above minimum wage, by the way, you can't afford to live anywhere. Groceries for four people or three people, say you have two kids and yourself, groceries for three people minimally is $100 a week, minimally, because a gallon of milk costs you almost $4. A giant box of cereal costs you $6 or $7. A loaf of bread today, an average price of a loaf of bread is about $2.50. You can get some, I'm an avid shopper, you can get bread for $2.18 a loaf. You can get Publix brand horrible for you bread that's all white, all flour, you know, all the things that really are not so good for you for just under $2. I drink almond milk. Almond milk is for a gallon is, I'm sorry, a half a gallon is almost $4. At my house, we go through 2 gallons of milk a day. That's about $8 a day. And the cereal and the bread, because they're the staples, they go here like literally like water. So a young woman who's trying to make a go of it, if she's not bringing home a decent amount of money, she can't do it. So the goal is to find something that is affordable, and I mean affordable. So we did talk about the other day, I said to Shelley, I drive around all the time, Spike and I do garage sales and things like that. Everywhere you look, there's empty businesses, empty houses, empty buildings that aren't doing anything. There's plumbing in them, there's electricity in them, and nobody's doing anything with them. And that saddens me because most of them have gone back to the bank that furnished the money to pay for them, and then somebody has not been able to keep up with the astronomical payments and taxes and insurance. Taxes and insurance for somebody on a regular home here in South Florida is to the tune of about $8,000 a year, just so you know. $8,000 broke up in weeks is a substantial lot of money for you to have to cough up along with your rent, or, well, if you're paying taxes and insurance, it's a mortgage. So if your mortgage is, if you're lucky enough to have a mortgage that's like around $1,500, you've got to add on about another $650 to that to pay your insurance and your taxes. A lot of money. A lot of money. And that doesn't count gas in your car, and that doesn't count school lunches. Now, that's one thing South Florida does, and I'm not aware of whether or not this is happening nationwide. I know a lot of people I talk to, it is, but I couldn't tell you. I will research that a little bit and be able to tell us next week about lunches and breakfasts that are being sponsored by public schools. Almost any kid can go in and have a thing of milk, a thing of orange juice, and a bowl of cereal in the morning without having to pay for it, which I think is awesome. But lunch is pitiful. Lunch at the high school is like four chicken sticks in a basket, and that's it. And that's your free lunch, and maybe a milk, which doesn't sustain a teenage boy who's playing football all afternoon. So it's an issue. It's a big issue. And I really applaud this lady who came up with this, and I hope that there's enough funding. But one of the statistics that we realized when we talked about this was the fact that billions of dollars are spent every year for domestic abuse, or to fight domestic abuse, or to help these people after, you know, after something has happened. In the year 2007, which was, you know, what, 6 years ago, $140 million on shelter for domestic violence victims. And there was a tally of $400,000 for permanent housing. So, again, you know, I don't know what everybody's thinking, but this should be taking precedence on, you know, on what needs to be done and what isn't all that important. That's certainly a very, very important endeavor, to find places that we can house these people, and they can have their own place, a place to call their home, that doesn't devastate them, that doesn't put them in a position where they can't function. Another thing that we will eventually talk about, and I don't know what to do about this because it's a it's an ongoing thing, and that's utilities. If you are having city water, that's very expensive today. When I was a kid, if somebody told me you had to pay for water, I'd have said, what? Water's not free? Of course, now you have to pay for air from a compressor at a gas station, which just blows me away, too, if you'll forgive the pun. But you have, you know, these people struggle all the time with paying their bills. Electricity is at an all-time high, and electricity is out of sight. And they offer budgets, and they offer all these kind of things. But if you 1 month go out of what they've budgeted you to, they go back to make sure that they get enough money. So that's also out of hand. Now, if you can live frugally, and here in South Florida, where the temperature is 90 degrees almost every day this summer, and don't have an AC, you can probably save some money. And if you don't have, yes, are you there?
Yeah. When I just want to let you know, when I was having some of the financial difficulties when I was out of work, I had FPL has a program. You can call them and they give you these numbers, but they have a program for people that aren't making enough to pay their electric, that there are certain places that will pay it for a couple of months until you get on your feet and that kind of thing. I was, by the time I found out about it, I was already back to work. So I was just trying to find a way to just reduce my payment for a couple of months while I was getting back on my feet, because I found out about the program actually after I had already gone back to work. But for people that are out of work, they can have almost their entire bill handled through some of these agencies. I had called one of them, and the only reason why they didn't approve me on the spot was because I had already gone back to work, so I didn't get the funding. But there are agencies that are set up there. I think they have to wait till you get an actual disconnect notice, which usually gives you like a week or so. And then when you're in that situation, they will step in to make sure your electric's not cut off, providing that your income is within this desperate range or whatever. But just so people know that, they should call FPL if they're in that situation and ask them for the names of the and they're usually like churches and things like that to do this, and they have funds just to help these people. So in your area, that's why you have to go to FPL, and then they tell you who in your area is sponsoring this type of help.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Well, I knew about that for people. I think I've talked about the organization that helps pay utilities when somebody has cancer and is out of work and sick and all that stuff. I knew about those places. And I do know that FPNL will try to work with you. But the problem here, I think all those things are Band-Aids. I think that somebody has to do something about the extraordinary cost of power in a day when we have all these innovations. Instead of making it more affordable, it's made it more expensive. They went through after several hurricanes, what was it, 2005 or 2006 when we got hit with all those hurricanes. Do you remember?
It was 2004 and 2005, I think.
Okay. So when that happened, remember when they started putting a lot of the electrical underground to protect it from hurricanes and stuff, because so many places were out of power for weeks, and trying to get it back on and everything was a major chore. So they did some things like that, and they've done a lot of other things to increase the wattage and the power. I live in a very large house. The average bill here is $600 a month for electricity. $600 a month. Now,
yeah,
again,
that's astronomical,
you know,
but you do, yeah.
And the thermostat is set at 78, not 73. But it's still that, and I keep all the blinds and I have blackout drapes almost everywhere to keep the sun from shining in and making the house warmer. So there's things that you can do, but at the end of the day, that's a very, very, very large bill. And most of the people I know, their average electricity bill for an apartment is to the tune of between $100 and $200 a month. And like I said, for somebody who's struggling, that's a lot of money. So
right.
All of these things have to be.
My whole house is almost $450. Right now it's lower because I'm not running it in the back anymore because I don't have anybody living back there. But when I have both air handlers running, I'm over $400 a month. So I know exactly what you're talking about.
Yeah, yeah. Well, and there's two units at my house, and the same with Mike and Valerie. They have three units at their house because their house was added on to as well. And, it's a big, big expenditure. And then, like I said, if you have well water like we do, then you've got to pay for all the stuff to keep the well water bathable. We don't drink it anyway, but I don't cook with it or anything like that.
Well water, and they think you don't have a water bill, but, yeah, you do. You have to maintain it. You have to do monthly maintenance on it. You have to add salt.
Mm-hmm.
You have to add chemicals. You know, so, yeah, having a water softening system requires maintenance, and if anything goes down, you got to get it repaired. I mean, I've been out of water twice already this year. Somebody drove over one of my pipes, and then I come out one day a couple months ago, and I have this stream of water shooting 15 feet in the air. One of the pipes on top of my pump just got a little teeny tiny hole in it, but the pressure was shooting the water all the way up, and I had no pressure in my house. That was an expensive repair. You know, so it's like, we're not paying for city water, but you still have a monthly expense. And with well water, I think it's probably more than the city water bill.
I do, too. I absolutely do, too. Well, average water bill is, to the tune of $40 or $50 a month, which is when I was young. The first water bill that we ever had in upstate New York was like $13 a month. So that's, grown extensively as well. But the well water between salt and chlorine and keeping the filters clean and all that kind of stuff is more expensive than that, I would say. So it is. I guess the reason I'm bringing up all this stuff is no matter who you are, unless you're really, really, really got a great job or already have some cash put away and everything, it's expensive to survive today. There is nothing that I would say is inexpensive. I would say everything that we do today is a lot more expensive than it was, say, 10 years ago. So when you're talking about a young woman or even a young man who's trying to do something on their own, it's, you know, almost impossible for them. And if they've, if you're have been dependent on the other person's salary, the one that you're trying to get away from, then it becomes undoable for you. We talked many, many times about survival and being able to pay your bills and all that stuff. And I've talked many, many times about the couple of grandchildren that I have here that would like to be out on their own. They want to get married and they want to have their own apartment and everything. First, last, and security. You got to save up like $3,500. And then a deposit on everything that you use. FP&L has a very large deposit. Now even cable companies, there for a while they were at war, so nobody was, you know, nobody had to pay the down payment. But now I had somebody tell me the other day they called Comcast and Comcast wanted a down payment from them. I said, you're kidding me. They said, no. So it's incredibly expensive.
Yeah, Comcast is not competitive at all anymore, and you can't really do much about it because they're considered the number one carrier in the United States.
Mm. Is that right?
They don't even try to work with you anymore. If you want to go somewhere else, they don't care.
Mm-hmm.
You know, before you'd say, like, oh, I'm getting a better deal from AT&T, and they try to match it. They don't do that anymore.
Uh-huh, yeah. Well, like I said, it has become almost undoable for a lot of people. Of course, we talked about that one night. Remember, a few months ago, we did a story about all the people that join families and all live together almost like a commune. And, of course, that's what I do here. I have there's 9 of us that live here. And there was 10, and there has been 11. Right now, there's 9 of us. So, but I do that so that everybody can survive. And I'm okay with that. I'm not one of those people who finds that to be difficult to do. I don't. I like people. I'm not one to be alone for very long. So it's a good thing for me. But years ago, that's how people did it as well. Years ago, grandma and grandpa and mom and dad and all the kids all lived together. It was like a homestead, and everybody had their own space, but everybody helped with all the chores, and everybody did everything together, and that is a way to do it. And if you can find a good enough friend that you can do that with, I think that's a plus as well, and share the expenses. But you always have to remember to make sure that you all have your own space. And there have to be really, really good guidelines in the very beginning so that everybody understands what's expected of them, what won't be okay, and what will be okay, and set down the guidelines. And I think everybody can do that. And that is one way to, you know, have a little bit of ease on monthly bills, I think. So.
Well, what you just said, actually, just a little sidebar here, about, you know, just making sure that everybody knows what's expected of them up front. Actually, that's the best way to approach life in its totality. Whether you're getting into a business with somebody, you're getting into a relationship with somebody, you're going to be living together with somebody, whenever you do anything where you're going to be in each other's space, or that you have some sort of financial obligation, such as getting into business, you've got to set the agreement before you get into it, before you move into that apartment together, before you start running that business together, because when you don't hammer it out on paper and look at each other and say, this is what we're agreeing to, each person assumes that they understand the deal, and they go in what their understanding was, and it may not be what the other person understood. And then 3 months, 6 months, a year down the ride, it all falls apart. So it's really good advice to kind of hammer that out right from the get-go. I've been very fortunate that I've had living arrangements where I either lived in an apartment with a friend or I had somebody living with me. And I would say in the vast majority of cases, it always worked out very well because we kind of knew what to expect from each other. And everybody goes, oh, you can't work for a friend or you can't live with a friend. that's always been the best situations for me. I've had both of those work out very well because we kind of set the stage from the get-go so that you always had a comfortable idea of what was expected from each other. So it's good advice.
Mm-hmm. Well, and I agree with you, and I think that assumption, you know, is a very dangerous thing to do, no matter what you're talking about. I agree with that. Another little tidbit that I was going to talk about early on, and I forgot about it. Today is Friday the 13th.
Oh, yeah.
And I think that if you go about it with the right attitude, this could be a very, 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 very lucky day for all of us. So instead of everybody thinking, you know, oh, my God, I better be careful, or maybe I shouldn't drive the car, or all those craziness, this could be the best day you've had all week. So instead of looking at it like it's going to be a bad day and maybe setting that tone, think about it in another way. Friday the 13th could be the luckiest day of the week. And
what's so funny is that Friday the 13th has typically, for me, been lucky throughout my life because I don't superstition. I think it cripples people. And a lot of superstitions are based on events that took place that have nothing to do with the future, that have nothing to do with your circumstances. It's because something happened on that day or something happened to somebody regarding this particular superstition. And it's just an event that doesn't have anything to do with anybody else. And then somebody created a bad luck superstition around it. And I know where the Friday the 13th superstition came from, and it was a horrific event, but it has nothing to do with modern day. So I choose to go against convention, and because I have a good idea and because I don't like superstition, it's always ended up being a really good day for me. So I'm just putting that out there.
Mm-hmm. Well, and I agree with you. I think that we can make today anything we want to make it. And personally, I choose to make it a great day. I'm doing a couple favors for friends this morning, and I think that it can be everything you need it to be if that's the way you believe it's going to be. The power of conviction and the power of belief are amazing for most of us if we just learn how to utilize them. I should have looked up something about Friday the 13th. I know people posted, I looked at Facebook really early this morning, and I was like, oh, God, it's Friday the 14th, or Friday the 13th, everybody's saying, and I was like, oh, yeah, that's right. I'm not scared. But a lot of people are, you know, it's funny, a lot of people are like, somebody wrote, I'm scrolling down here to see, Friday the 13th, keep calm and don't go swimming, don't have sex, don't smoke, don't drink, don't go out, don't split up, don't run from the killer. If you trip, get up and run, and above all, turn on the stupid light before entering any room. That's, of course, from the movie Friday the 13th. Crack me up.
Oh, that was great. I love that.
So if somebody hears music going, dun-dun, dun-dun, get the hell out of there.
Oh, that's great. I love it. That was really good. Good advice.
Yes, it makes sense to me.
Trip, right?
Yep, that's it.
Oh,
that
God,
is exactly
hilarious.
It. Yeah, it makes, you know, when I read that this morning, I was like, oh, that's too funny. And I wasn't even putting it to the movie until I got to the bottom part, you know. And then I cracked up. I started laughing. I thought, oh, Friday the 13th.
That's right.
So,
right.
Yeah, so... I want to put out there again, we're down to just a minute of time, and I want to put out there that we are looking for a place to open a detox center. And it will be a very serious detox center, a place where you can come and just spend one day and get yourself to a better place. And no major commitment, no $15,000, no, you know, an easy day of detoxing and an easy day of getting yourself to a better place. So we are looking for a place to do this. I can be contacted on my Facebook page, or you can email me at reenie.brewer91@gmail.com. We would love to stay in this vicinity, West Palm Beach, and maybe as far up as Port St. Lucie at the end of Lake Okeechobee. We'd even be interested in a campground setting that would be kind of back to nature and very calm and serene. We are very serious about this, so if anybody has anything out there or any ideas, or anybody who would like to be a part of this when it comes together, we would love to hear from you. So everybody have
a wonderful
weekend.
Rainy, also a B&B or a motel that's been, or a hotel that's been closed down, or that's not doing a lot of business, that might be an immediate solution for us as well.
Yep. I was thinking to myself yesterday when I was driving around seeing all the storefronts, even maybe a storefront in the very beginning, someplace where we can just make it like a nice, comfortable living room with enough space for everybody to relax and do it for a little while. We're open. Let's put it that way. We're open to any ideas, and because we really want to make this work. So everybody have a great weekend, and stay out of trouble, and don't worry about today. It can be the best day you had all week. talk to you next Monday morning. Bye, Shell. I'll see you later.
All right. I'll talk to you later, hon. Bye.
Bye.